Stunt Academy.
I mean, sounds like the best school ever.
I lived in China for quite a long time, training with the Shaolin monks. Wow. A pirate show in India at the hottest part of the year.
I mean, most people are going to be thinking, how do you get that job?
I believe in working to get what you want. Everybody fits somewhere. I have not gone for some things, and that has been the failure. I wanted off that conveyor belt. That is still on my list of my dreams, is to appear in a Jackie Chan film. It did come from that, from the toothpaste incident.
Hello and welcome back to the She Who Dares Wins podcast. And today my guest is Carolyn. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, I'm going to kick this off with the first question. So She Who Dares Wins, what does that mean to you? And can you tell me a little bit about when you might have dared and won?
I'm always up for a challenge, so I'll take anything on, really. No matter what field it's in, I'll just say, you know, if somebody needs help with something, that's where I find I go for things. I think it was being a brownie as a child, where it's always brownies think of others before themselves.
I like that.
And do a good turn every day. And I thought, I do that, yeah. If somebody says, I need this building, or I need this moving, or I need these financial matters moving, that's, you know, I'll take anything on. With my own life, I've just done a lot of things where, well, as we discussed prior, it seemed like a good idea at the time. And I think with instincts, it does pay off.
Yeah.
I've done all kinds of things. I think I'd been in Australia, and I was flying back with Qatar Airways, and I thought, right, I'll tell you what, I'll just change my flight, so I'll have a few days in Doha. But I won't book a hotel for the first night. Why would you do that? I thought, I'll just show up and sleep at the airport. And then landed in Doha, and there was some kind of special dignitary arriving, and the place was rammed, and the airport isn't very big, and there isn't anywhere to sleep in the airport anyway. So I just wandered off and found a taxi and went to the hotel I'd booked for the following night. It was a bit scary. When I look back at some of the things I've done, and I go, what? I would not do that again. But I've done it and I've survived it, and maybe you just learn something from that. I did it. I met a friend of mine in Brazil, but I was arriving the day before him because he couldn't get the flight. And so I landed in Rio in the middle of the night and thought, oh, well, this is not renowned for being a safe place as a single female who doesn't know where she's going. But again, got to the hotel and that was fine.
So it's kind of, what's the worst that can happen? I love that. And I love that mixed with travel that you've done and your experiences with, you know, stunts, martial arts. Can you tell me a little bit about your career? Because it's so... like when you sent me, you know, what it is that you've done, I was like, whoa, there's a lot to go out here. But I'm intrigued by the stunt, the martial arts, because that took you traveling. It took you to other countries to learn. You immersed yourself in it. Can you tell me a little bit about, you know, going to China and that experience?
Yeah. So the thing about China is it often starts with the fact that I can speak Chinese fairly well. And people be like, oh, how come you speak Chinese? And I say, oh, well, I worked in China and I lived in China for quite a long time, training with the Shaolin monks. And then people go, Shaolin monks? Well, how did that happen? And I'll go, oh, well, it's because I was working on a show in India. And then people are going, oh my goodness. So we have to keep going back and back and back to get to the origins. But yeah, that was the start of my interest in China. I had done martial arts for a long time. I'd auditioned for a show. It was an American company. The audition was in London. I got it and I was shipped out to India to do a contract there. And on that contract, we had a couple of Shaolin monks. We had a couple of guys from Russia who were horse experts. A champion cliff diver from Canada. It was quite an eclectic mix. And then there was me and a couple of others.
So were you teaching or were you actually
performing? No, we were performing. It was a pirate show.
Right.
Yes. Wow. A pirate show in India at the hottest part of the year. And we did usually 5 shows a day. Some days we only did 4, but it was generally 5 shows a day outdoors. The first one was at noon. So you can imagine that, running around in India at noon outdoors.
I mean, most people are going to be thinking, how do you get that job? That's just incredible. Yeah. So a pirate show. And so, yeah, so you were out doing that show.
Yeah. And I just connected really well with the monks because I'm always an early morning person. I like to get up. I like to train. I believe in working to get what you want, as in like a lot of people say about my physique, if they see me eating a cake, they'll say, oh, well, it's all right for you because, and I'm thinking, well, it's all right for me because I put in the hours and I don't live off cake, but I was carrying on training while I was doing the show. So I would get up and do my early morning workout, and then I would go to the beach and just train down there for a while. Then I would go back, and the monks were very similar. They would get up and they would be training, and the other people had possibly indulged in, you know, alcoholic beverages the night before, so they weren't getting up as early because the first show wasn't until noon. So it was me and the monks a lot of the time, and they didn't really speak any English, and I didn't speak Chinese at the time, so we would just walk around and point at things. So I learned how to say frog and moon, and but not construct a sentence. But we had a kind of vibe, like we really connected. And so they said to me at the end of that contract, they said, oh, why don't you come and train with us at our school in China? So I did. I just thought, go on then.
Amazing. And so that experience, like, that is, well, you go into the source of where it's all come from. What was that like from arriving on the plane? And then, like you said, it was quite a few years ago. Put my teeth in today. And there was no internet, no phones. That could have been scary. No,
it was. But again, it's the instinct thing. I'd got the visas, all the paperwork and everything, and flew out there, changed planes, flew to the domestic airport, and thought, well, I hope they're here to meet me, because I didn't really have a plan if they didn't meet me, but I would have come up with something. That's the thing, is like, I'm very much, all right, well, it didn't work out. That avenue didn't pay off. I'll just think of something else. I don't think I've ever been in a situation where I didn't think I could get out of it. I've always been careful, like, save a little bit of money in your bank account so you can transfer funds to yourself if you need it anywhere in the world. Obviously, I can fight, so if anything was going to kick off, I would be able to handle myself before I went and trained with them anyway. I was already experienced in fighting. And I'm a pragmatic person. I'll just find a way. But yeah, I met up with them and it was fantastic, because you get people who say, particularly in the West, where they go, oh, I've been doing taekwondo for 15 years, but they mean like they've probably gone twice a week for a couple of hours in an evening class, whereas the kung fu in China, you know, if they thought you'd been doing it for 15 years, they'd expect you to be invincible, because the hours that are put in, and it's all day every day apart from Sundays.
Wow. So it's super intense. Talk me through like a traditional day.
It varied with the season. So because I was living there for quite a long time, but the summer was my favorite, because we'd get up at about 5, and then different classes would all gather together outside. It was quite regimented. And then we would run in our groups, kind of like an army. I don't know what you call them, platoons, groups of people anyway. And we would run as our classes, and different classes went to different areas. The one that gave us the best conditioning was a dam that was nearby. So we would start at the bottom of the dam steps, and you would sprint to the top, walk back down, sprint to the top, walk back down, hop up on one leg, walk back down, hop up on the same leg, walk back down, and then switch like that. So you became really, really strong really quickly. And we'd do the frog jumps up here, and it was usually two of everything.
And were you the only Westerner there?
At that time, there was me and there were a couple of young Austrian boys. They'd negotiated something with their school. I don't know how you do that. I wish I'd known that when I'd been at school.
Hell yeah.
But somehow, because they were only 15, 16, and I think they'd just made some agreement with their school that they were going to do this year where they lived in China and trained Kung Fu every day instead of doing geography and physics, English literature.
And what about women? Like, were there women?
There were other girls, other Chinese girls training there. I was the only white girl there.
Is that a relatively new thing? Was it traditionally just men, or?
I don't honestly know. I mean, they were very open. There was no discrimination. Everybody was treated the same. So in terms of what training they were given, what discipline they were given, if they stepped out of line, everything was the same for everyone.
Wow.
And that applied to Chinese and the Westerners as well.
You know. So after that morning, which sounds really relaxed.
So then we would run back and eat breakfast, and then you sort of had maybe about 20 minutes and you would go back out into the training ground outside the school, and we would just do forms, we would train weapons. Yeah, it was just more and more of kung fu, just like, not like downloading it from the Matrix, but, but you actually had to put in the graft and get the skills and, yeah, spend hours and hours and hours conditioning. I mean, there was a hall as well for if it was raining, we would go in the hall and spend hours just looking in the mirrors and turning the swords and twirling and making sure your coordination was right, your lines were right. Because there's sort of a, I think, a misconception that kung fu is all about the leaping around and the weapons and the prettiness. And it is, obviously, that's what grabs people's attention. But there is the actual fight side of it. They do have sparring contests and things. But then that would be the rest of the morning. Then you'd have lunch. And then in the afternoon, normally had another 2.5 to 3 hours of training and then have an evening meal. Some nights, it wasn't every night, but then some nights we would go and have another sort of hour and a half. Wow. In the hall training.
Wow. And the physicality of that, you know, on your body every day, I'm guessing because of the performances that you were doing previously and your training anyway, that you were relatively fit before you went out. But, you know, what was the biggest challenge when you were out there?
We got to a point the second year that I was there, because it was super, the first time I only went for a couple of months, did 2 months of that over the winter time. And the thing was, there wasn't any heating and the hot water was reliant on Sung Shifu. He used to go and heat stoke up the coals under the boiler. So a school of, I don't know how many hundreds of us there were, over 5 stories of this huge concrete building, he would stoke the boiler. Well, if you weren't the first one down to get some hot water, you'd get warm water, or you'd get cool water, or you'd get cold water.
The cold showers are born.
The cold shower I wasn't so bothered about, but I did like to have hot water for hot drinks.
Yeah.
Made a big difference. And then there was a bathhouse that was probably less than a mile away. So when it was a really, really cold wintry evening, I would walk to the bathhouse. You pay your money and you go in. And there was a communal one, but I always used to get the private one where you had the shower and the bath. And I'm talking like tin bath in an unfurnished room.
Right.
But you had hot water. And I used to stand under the hot water and tell myself, remember this moment where you think you're too hot. And then when my hair was dripping wet and a hat on, walking back through the minus however many degrees back to the school, I'd be like, remember you were too hot. Remember that time when you were too hot. And it was freezing cold.
Amazing.
Yeah. I think it's character building.
Yeah. It's incredible. And I think not a lot of people would kind of have the balls to do that. But then also when they're out there, you know, that is intense. Like, all day, every day. But I'm guessing it has given you so many skills in life, like mindset, like discipline.
Yeah. Discipline, resilience. And the other point I was going to make was the second year that I was there, we had a guy from Russia. He was quite young as well. And he came to us one day and he said, you know what I've started doing? I went to bed at 7:30 last night. And slept right through till 5. So a few of us started trying that. We're like, oh, okay, yeah. Because sometimes you reach the point where your body's going, I need to sleep. Right. I need some rest. But I'm up for it. It's, yeah. So give me education, give me training, give me skills. I think life is, for me, it's all the journey. Definitely not the final destination, but
yeah.
I love travel as much as I do getting to where I'm going to. And I think if you can every day add something to your skill set or improve something in your skill set. I mean, I have such a huge range. If I speak Chinese, I'm interested in other languages. I do a lot of physical things. I like climbing. I like fighting. I do aerial circus, running. The ones I tend to stay away from are the water ones. I'm not really that keen on swimming, but
I forgive you for that. I forgive you for that.
But also music. I play piano. I'm interested in music, and I think just any opportunity. And if you've got the chance to go somewhere and just do that, because I was so interested in it and so keen, and yeah, I built up a lot of skills and strength.
Do you think, I love the theme of, I think this has kind of helped me a little bit over my career, is staying curious.
Mm.
And I think people sometimes forget that. Do you think that, you know, staying curious is taking you on all these amazing...
I'm absolutely sure of it.
Yeah.
Because you're not stagnating then. You're always moving on.
And not being afraid. I mean, your career, everything you've done, seems like a little bit of a roller coaster of adventures.
Yeah.
I take it you don't have a fear of, you know, I need to be here at a certain point. It's very much as things come and like, oh, that works for me. And you're not afraid to move off this path that I think sometimes social media or we're expected to be on. But I kind of talk to a lot of women now and they're like, oh, I've done this for so long. I wish I'd have tried this and this. You seem to fit the bill of, fuck yeah, I did it. Like I don't, there's no regrets there because I went and.
Yeah, well, I went to an all girls school for secondary school. So I don't know whether that's a good or a bad thing. It doesn't prepare you for what's out there in the real world. Uh-huh. But up until probably the third year, I think, or year nine as it is now, I'd wanted to be a dentist. I was interested in those science subjects and right. I didn't like going to the dentist. So I thought, oh, well, the best thing I could possibly do is to become a dentist. And the teachers were aware of this, but when it got around to careers evening and you had to pick your subjects for GCSE and they were saying, all right, well, Carolyn, yep, here you go. You want to be a dentist, don't you? And I just went, no. And they went, yes, you do. And I was like, no, I don't. I don't know what I do want to do. But it's not that. I know I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
And I think from that point, it started this, not a conflict with the teachers, but I think they were a bit more on edge. At the time, I was thinking, oh, yes, the teachers want the best for you. And then later you realise they want to get the highest ranking on some table or other. And they're really not that bothered. Or I shouldn't say that. There will be some that are bothered. But it felt like... not that I was a disappointment, but it was a curveball to them. And then I'd said, right, when I finish my A-levels, I would like to go and do this academic year in the USA where you went and did a senior year of high school. And so they said, oh, yes, but you'll apply for university for when you get back.
You will apply.
Well, I don't know if I'll really want to do that. Well, no, apply anyway. So I did. I can't remember how it worked out, but I ended up applying 2 years in a row. It's so long ago, I don't remember what the system was, but I'd got these offers and I said, oh, well, I know I don't want to do these. Even when I get back, I don't want to do this. So I'm going to reject them. And they went, no, just defer them, defer. And I just went, reject. I don't want to do it. And then I had to apply the following year and... similar thing. I was totally different subjects. Originally, I'd applied for psychology and statistics. And then the second time around, it was something like sport and leisure management and got the offers and rejected again. Went and did my academic year in the USA and never looked back. Took a completely different path.
Yeah. But I guess there was some sort of gut instinct in you that was like you knew from an early age that the typical route was not going to be for you.
Yeah, I think it just felt too much like they were churning you along a sort of a conveyor belt from one thing to the next thing to the next expected thing. And I wanted off that conveyor belt because I thought, I don't want to be, it wasn't that I wanted to be different. I just thought there's something else out there. There's definitely something.
Yeah. And so much for you. So America and then getting into the martial arts, that then led to the jobs in kind of the film, TV, performing world. And then how did the
aerial. The aerial circus. That, I had a bit of a break because of, for medical reasons, and that it's much like the acting industry. As soon as you're out, somebody's come in and filled your place and that's it. And it's really quite chiseling away to get back into the stunt world. And somehow I was just suddenly doing a trapeze act for somebody's wedding.
Random.
Yeah. So I've been doing that for the last 10 years.
Oh, wow. So what kind of thing, where does that take you? Because I feel like it could be anywhere.
Takes you to weddings.
Right, cool.
I've done quite a few different things. Like we get corporate functions and private parties and stuff like that. So take my trapeze to wherever they need me. I did silks once at the Leeds First Direct Arena.
Oh, nice.
I performed there for the Yorkshire Awards. Welcome to Yorkshire Awards.
Right, okay.
So I've gone all over this country with that work. but it is, I still do like to travel for pleasure, but I kind of want to get back to the idea of working away, because it's nice to be working and feeling fulfilled in what you're doing and still having a little trickle of an income while you're still,
yeah,
while you're somewhere else.
Yeah, oh, totally.
We'll get right back to our guests, but I'd wanted to give a big shout out to each and every one of you tuning in. Your downloads, subscriptions, and those shiny reviews you've been leaving, well, they're the heartbeat of She Who Dares Wins. Seriously, without your support, we wouldn't be here sharing these badass stories week after week. Now, here's the scoop. We're currently strutting our stuff without a sponsor, but hey, no sweat. You can keep this adventure alive. Swing by shewhodareswins.com and treat yourself to some empowering merch. Trust me, it's not just gear, it's a statement. And for those ultimate insiders, well, why not become a patron? Just £5 a month, and you're not just supporting the show, you're elevating it. We're talking secret bonus episodes with each guest, major discounts on all our merch, and a bunch of other goodies. You're not just a listener, you're a vital part of the tribe. Every bit of support fuels our mission to inspire and empower, so let's keep breaking barriers together. Stay daring, stay unstoppable. She Who Dares Wins. Let's get back to it.
You spent time in Australia at, I guess, stunt school, was that correct?
Yeah, that was the Stunt Academy.
I mean, sounds like the best school ever. What kind of stuff were you doing there? I mean, obviously stunt stuff, but like what, you know, what were some memorable experiences?
Before I went, I wasn't really too sure about fire, but I embraced that when I got there because we were doing full body burns. And then I've gone on and I've done shows. I've done over 130 full body fire burns for shows.
Wow.
And a lot of those were for a dance show. So I've been dancing on fire, which is quite appealing. But we did all sorts. We covered falling off boats, falling off horses, falling off buildings. There's a lot of falling involved, stair falls, just falling off your own feet in different styles. We did some fighting. Obviously, it's different from your real fighting. Your choreographed fighting has to look prettier and sell things to people as hits, whereas when you're fighting for real, you don't want them to know what's coming because you want to win. We did a whole host of different things. We had ratchets, like if you see people being next to an explosion in a film and they shoot backwards, that kind of thing. So wire work. Stuff like that.
Just playing every day, but dangerous play.
Dangerous play, yeah. Control. People have said to me, oh, you must be such an adrenaline junkie. And I say, not at all. Wow. I don't like that feeling of... the places where I've had adrenaline rushes are the night that I arrived in Doha. There was a bit of a dodgy instance when I was trying to get into the lift and a man was trying to follow me. That gave me an adrenaline rush and I didn't like it.
Right.
But things like that, that I've had other, somebody tried to pick my pocket in China. That wasn't as bad because it was in a wide open public space. But things like that gave me the adrenaline rush and I'm like, I don't like that. But I do like adventure, but I like to think, right, well, I've trained to do this. It's within my control now.
Okay.
And I want to do it in a controlled fashion. I'm not just, oh, there's a really high building. It'd be so cool to jump off it. I want to think, right, well, I know the safety protocols and what to expect of myself and my brain and my body. And, yeah.
Amazing. And do you have any cool stories from, like, you've done a bit of TV and film, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think people look at that as quite a glamorous world. And the reality is, you know, on set, it's not necessarily, it's slow. There's a lot of things going on behind the scenes. Like, do you have any kind of cool stories from that?
It's like you say, people expect it to be glamorous, but they expect show work to be glamorous. I remember working on a street show a few years back. I think it was for the Tour de Yorkshire when that was coming through.
Oh, yeah.
And I worked with a dancer and she was saying, oh, people say, oh, your job is so glamorous. And I go, I get changed in a port-a-loo. It really isn't. And I think on film, I love films anyway. I love the whole structure of films, the filmmaking. So it, a lot of people, when you go on set, they think if you took them there, they would think it was so boring. Mm. But there's always so much going on, the different departments working on it to put it all together. Flew out to Cape Town and did a doubled a woman for a stunt on Flood, which was a Robert Carlyle thing way back in the day.
Yes.
So we were there, you're normally 12 hours on set. So we're there from the start of the day, wardrobe, hair, makeup. Sitting around. Had the EPK guy come. And I think I disappointed him. So they have the electronic press kit and they'll come and interview you so that they can send out sort of teasers for people and like, this is what's happening, this is what's going on. And I was standing in costume ready before the stunt. And he said, right, so you must be really, really pumped for this. And I said, not really, no. I'm just quite calm. I'm looking forward to doing the work and getting on with my job. No, but I mean, you must just be so full of adrenaline. I went, no. I was just a really chilled out sort of thing. We'd done rehearsal for it. We'd only used half the volume of water that we were going to use for the actual shot, but we'd seen the flow of the water and where it took you as a human being hit by that volume. Yeah, so I was on set all day and then we went and we did it. We filmed it once. I would have done that over and over again.
Really?
It was such a good one, considering I'm not really a water person.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just a great stunt and it looks nice in the final product.
Do you watch films now and like especially with stunt work or anything like that? Do you pick it apart or
I've done that since I was a child.
Oh,
yeah.
Have you? Interesting. Because I like the one film that I watched recently, which I think was just full, and I was fascinated from a point of view of how they actually got the camera shots. It was like one fluid shot, I believe.
Yeah.
Was that, and I hate Netflix films because I think they just miss a key ingredient, but that's a whole other podcast episode. is the one with Hemsworth with the big fight. I don't know if you've seen it, the big fight scene through a prison. And it's just fight upon fight upon fight.
Is that Extraction?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, how do you coordinate something like that? And it is fascinating. It is. And I'm guessing it's all figured out, right?
Before, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a huge amount of work goes into it before anybody even starts to pick up a camera,
yeah,
and a microphone. It's all the storyboarding and planning that go into creating something like that. But I've, again, from childhood, I used to look at, I have never cried at a film because I've never been that emotionally involved because I'm detached and looking at how they built it. I like stuff, I'll laugh at comedies.
Yeah.
But I'm always looking at, oh, I like the way they lit that. I like the colours that they've used.
Right.
I like the way that character came in at this angle. I liked the shot that they used, the way they moved the camera or the way they cut something. And then you'll go, oh, green screen, or oh, CGI helicopter.
Yeah.
So I've done that and followed it through as the technology's changed. I've been like, oh, yeah, that's not real. That wasn't a proper high fall. That's on wires. That's on a descender. That's, you know, all these kind of things. So I like the way something's constructed and those component parts, and I'm looking at how they did it. And then appreciating it as a finished product.
Yeah, yeah. And as it's meant to be seen.
But I do look at things like if there's a fire burn, say, you look at the way they filmed it, how long the shot is before they've cut it, try and work out how many times they did it, because you obviously can't be on fire for a great length of time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and how much of the fire has been CGI'd afterwards.
Oh, right, okay.
So it, not always. So, like, sometimes they'll have, like, background, but you can always tell. I mean, even my brother, he's not into that so much, but he's a computer-based person and he'll be like, oh, CGI, oh, that's not real. Or if they've used like a night filter on the camera to make it look like it's dusk and you go, oh, night filter. Yeah. It's clearly broad daylight when they shot that.
Oh, I love that. I'm probably never going to look at a film the same way now.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's fine. No, it's cool. It's nice to break these things down. I think it's fascinating. It's an art form, isn't it? And that's what makes a good film from a bad film. It's not just the acting. People focus just probably on like characters and storyline, but there's so much that goes into it. I mean, lighting, I've learned so much just from, you know, a podcast about how lighting can affect something and mood. And yeah, it is. It's incredible. So, I mean, have you failed at any point? Or have you done something and then just it's given you the biggest learning experience?
My biggest failures are not going for it. It's just been like a resounding thing. I think with the borderline, the upbringing, you know, sort of, I was still of an era where girls did this and boys did that,
right,
and girls made the home and boys went out to work. And I think when that's drip fed to you from childhood, it does keep resonating throughout. And so some things, I think because I always wanted to be independent, a lot of the time I've possibly had opportunities to go and do one day of work on some film, but it was a long way to go. I'd have had to pay my own expenses, I'd get paid for the job, come back, but break away from my normal job that was giving me a bit of an income to save up for the next big adventure. So I think my failure has been on thinking, oh, I need this much money before I can do that. I need this much of a cushion before I can move on to there. So I've tried a lot of things. And if you, when I have tried and failed at things, I'm trying to think of a good example. You just go, oh, right. Okay, so we learn from that.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't land in Doha without a hotel again.
Yeah.
I would have ordered a taxi already from the airport in Rio. It's things like that. But in terms of my career, yeah, I would say I have not gone for some things and that has been the failure, because if you just do it, might be fine.
Yeah. Yeah, that is the thing, isn't it? And I do hate the word failure, because I don't want people to, and again, it's not something that I always live by my own words, but you have to fail. Like, I think the biggest life lessons have been by failing. And some of the best stories come from failing and just giving things a chance. But yeah, you seem to, that's quite interesting that you would say that, because I wouldn't think that with everything that you've done.
No, I think, and it's this tendency as well, on social media particularly, to only show all the fantastic things that you're doing. Whereas for me, I must admit, I very rarely do social media, so I don't show anything that I'm doing, be it good or bad. I'm too busy doing it to telling people and taking selfies of it to be putting that out there. But yeah, I think you really have to go for something. I was inspired by Jackie Chan films. As soon as I latched onto what he did, the way he created those fight scenes and utilized everything around him, and not necessarily in a practical manner in real life, but just fantastic creativity. And I wanted to emulate him. And obviously he trained from a very early age in all the acrobatic elements. So he wasn't just a fighter, but he did all the acrobatics as well. So once I'd become aware of Jackie Chan, I thought, I really want to. That is still on my list of my dreams, is to appear in a Jackie Chan film, whether it's just in the background in a fight scene. I wouldn't, you know, want to fight Jackie himself, but just to be in that kind of a film, I would love that.
If there's anyone in the film industry watching this, listening to this right now, let's make that happen. Because what's your favorite Jackie Chan film?
Oh, I don't know, because they all have certain unique points to them.
So there's not one that was like,
no,
okay.
No, because a lot of people, they say, what's your favourite Jackie Chan film? And if you're into fighting and the creative elements, everybody will say Drunken Master 2, because the fight scenes in that
right,
are
okay.
spectacular. Right. But then he has amazing fights in Rumble in the Bronx. I mean, I could just name all of them and go, yes, that's a great fight scene, that time where he falls out of the bus, and just all these things that are, yeah, so inspirational about him. And I think the failure element is, I didn't start doing anything gymnastic until I was 24, which is like double the age at least that you're supposed to start at. Right. And all I wanted to do was be able to do this tumbling. And I wasn't as bothered about vaulting over something or doing the beam, but the tumbling element, I thought, I really, really wanted that. And I still really, really want that. But what I did was, I learned to do the flick, the back handspring, and over a series of weeks, and I had a really good back handspring, and then I lost it pretty much on the same night that I'd perfected it on the floor. I lost it
right
for a mental block, and I've had that mental block. And so my solution to that was to not try it and just mope around for the last 24 years saying, no, so for the last 23 years, I've been going, I really want to do that. We should try it. No, I can't. So I actually did some last night.
Amazing.
Perfect. Yeah. But not on my own, with a spotter. And I am going to
do that.
See a cognitive behavioral therapist to get rid of that block, because that to me is my failure. If I could have done this, it's like could have, would have, should have. I think if I'd pursued that at the time and gone, right, okay, sort it out. It's your
just
own brain.
Yeah.
You have
yeah.
power over it.
Yeah.
Sort that out. But I didn't. I just kept making an excuse. And I thought, well, if I could do a back handspring, and then I could do a few back handsprings, and I could back tuck, then I have that body awareness for stuff like that. I can make my fight scenes more spectacular. And I was just like, yeah, but if you practice it, then you might not be able to do it again still. So just don't practice it. And I've spent years, and I have over the years, I've not left that long gap, but I've kept going to it, and I'll be able to do it for a while, and then I can't do it. And then I it's like my head just talks me out of it. And I think, yeah, you really should have got on this back when you started.
Yeah, but I suppose that's part of the journey, isn't it? Like, maybe not, maybe this is your time. Like,
I honestly believe after last night, yeah.
Yeah.
It was the last class of the season for adults, and I'm thinking, right, so next year,
that's the challenge.
I will have literally spent half my life wanting to be able to do this.
Amazing.
Having been able to do it at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's people around you. Like, I have a really good supportive friend group, but you do obviously get those people who go, well, why would you want to do that? Oh, well, obviously you can't do it. And it's like red rag to a bull, that.
Same here.
So you can't do it. Okay. You just watch this.
Yeah. 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 It's like we were saying before, you know, me signing up for a marathon and not having like any experience of running.
So what?
Yeah. But the biggest, do you know what the biggest drive has been? Exactly what you've just said. So a few friends of mine were like, you know, maybe you should start with a half. Maybe why don't you try this? And I'm like, that's it. I'm done. Mm-hmm. This is going to happen. Whether I have to walk it. And I think it's that nice, like, stubbornness.
Yeah.
And kind of like, well, let's see where this can go. Like, why, you know, why would you not? And so I really resonate with that.
But again, it's kind of, yeah, you could walk it. Nobody's saying you have to sprint this marathon. Yeah. You're not having to break a world record.
No, it will
not
be broken.
Just, the records are safe, everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, but why shouldn't you? Like, oh, yeah. You can't do that. You can't run a marathon. All right, so I'll walk.
Yeah.
And then, but there were so many sort of these people that I call blockers that just go, no, you can't do it. Like you were talking about cold water swimming. I mean, I like cold therapy. I'm not as keen on the swimming part, but people go, oh, I couldn't do that. It's unbearable. And I say, no, it's uncomfortable.
Mm.
If you're not prepared to step out of the comfort zone, again, it's this stagnation. I look at other people and I go, well, fine. If you're happy there, just in your own little solid world of dependence and reliability, then okay, you know, not everything is for everybody, but it's when people try and block what you're wanting to do
without
with
even
things
knowing.
Like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
unbearable. It's not. It's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, think, oh, it's going to be great when I just immerse my whole body in this cold water. It isn't something that I go, oh, yeah, that'll be joyful. But you do it and you come out and feel like a better person for it.
Yeah. And do you feel like every little thing that you've done throughout your career, that it's kind of like empowered you to then, you know, do something else and then do something else? Like, I feel like there's a little win from every time you try something new, even if it's a failure. It's that confidence of like, oh, well, I did it and it wasn't that bad. So maybe I'll try this and it won't be that. I think it's that initial step, isn't it, for people of like, just take the step. Stay curious, take the step. You don't have to go in, you know, you don't have to be the world's best cold swimmer, but give it a go.
You have to get in the water.
To start, yeah.
Just start with the water.
Yeah.
Even if it is literally, in that case, dipping a toe in.
Yeah. Yeah.
You've started.
Yeah.
And once you've started, I think you can push yourself to do more.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when people say, oh, cold showers. Well, put it on the shower cold for 1 second.
Yeah.
And if you put it on for 1 second, you might find by the time you've reached up to turn it off, it's been 2 or 3 seconds.
Yeah.
And then you might find, oh, actually, I got to 10.
Yeah.
And it's just building, and you can apply that to anything. If you think, oh, there's this huge task that I have to complete. Well, okay, so let's break it down. And it's like going, I want you to produce a movie. And you go, oh my goodness, what do I do? Okay, well, ask people who might know about lighting, ask people who know about acting, ask people who know about using cameras and creating a scene. And
I guess, like, same with martial arts, is that you're breaking everything down effectively, aren't you?
Yeah.
To, like, the initial movement, then the follow-up, then the action reaction. And it's about sizable pieces or sizable steps for people to take to get where it is that they, not even where they want to be, like I don't think.
No, it's journey. I think it's never finished, is it?
No.
Like, you never, well, ultimate fighting champion. There's always something else.
Yeah.
There's always somebody out there who could bring you down with their move, or then you go, all right, okay, so this happens. So if they try that move again, what would I do? Or not that you have time in a fight to think about it, step back and analyze, but responding to something, and just it is go with the flow. It's kind of like, oh, well, this flight was delayed so that you have to go over here, or this has happened so you can't do that.
Do you think you were born with this, like, ability to, you know, like, from the early years? I'm always interested in whether this is developed over time or whether it's kind of like this innate thing that exists inside of you?
I think it was always waiting to come out, but I think I could tell you the point at which it was released.
Do.
I think I can. I had like the idyllic countryside childhood. I grew up in a village, went to the village school. Everything was, you know, nice. I had parents who love each other, and we have a younger brother. It's family and friends. And so you get up, go to school, go out and play. Back in the days when you could play and it wasn't deemed too dangerous.
Yeah.
I mean, I was always up trees or in muddy rivers or just doing all kinds of things like that. So I was always adventurous and curious. But I think when I was 11, our school used to go over to the East Barmby Outdoor Education Centre over near Whitby. And that's when it happened for me because we were at this place and sharing a dorm with some other girls. And that again, and we were learning about the coastal, the rocks and the sea life and all this kind of thing. But it wasn't that. It was the fact that for packed lunches, they didn't necessarily give us a sandwich every day. So I had 5 days of this. And so one day they'd give us like a chocolate bar and an orange and an apple. And it was just a mixture. They'd give you a bag of nuts back when nuts were allowed before everybody was allergic to them and other pieces of fruit. And I was like, oh my goodness. Because up until that point, every day of my life from eating solid foods, one meal was a sandwich. Every day. And suddenly I was in this place where I was learning about mermaids' purses and crabs and things. And I was like, oh my goodness, you don't have to eat a sandwich every day. And that blew my mind. And I have been just like that ever since. I just thought, yeah, why would you?
So the world of opportunity opened up from learning.
It was like, I don't have to eat a sandwich.
That's like the best analogy of like breaking free in life.
Yeah. And it was, yeah, that, I mean, that whole trip, there were other elements of it. We sitting around in the dorm one night with the teacher who'd taken us along, and she was saying, oh, do you, weird conversations, do you wet the toothbrush before you put the toothpaste on or after? And so the girls were like, oh, I, before, after. And I said, both. And she went, no. I said, yeah, I do. I wet the toothbrush. Like I rinse it because you don't know what's been on it. And then I put toothpaste on and then I wet the toothpaste. No, nobody does both. And I thought, well, I do. And that was the point where I thought, you're a teacher and you're telling me my opinion or what I do. And I thought it wasn't so much that I was angry with her. I thought, oh, well, I know I do that. I know I've always wet the toothpaste. And she was telling me different. And I think that's when I went, right, instincts. You know when something's right. You know when it's wrong.
Yeah.
You get a vibe. But you sort of pick up people's energies, I think, and the energy of an environment or a situation. When is it going to be dangerous? When is it not? And it, silly as it sounds, it did come from that, from the toothpaste incident.
Toothpaste sandwich.
Yeah. Like portals to another dimension. Yeah. I mean, my parents, I was always the different one in that I am adventurous and I don't eat sandwiches every day. But it got to the point where they're just like, where did you come from? Where? And I'll say, I'll make jokes about it. But I'm just looking up to see if the mothership's come back yet. Because I've learned a lot about this planet and I can feed back this information.
I love that there's a lot of intrigue and question in there.
Yeah.
Isn't there? There's a lot of like, well, hold on a minute. I think a lot of us accept a lot of things.
Yeah. It's kind of expecting everybody to do everything the way that you do. Yeah. And it's not like that.
No. It's like middle finger to like this tick box in society of like job, career. Like I actually do hate the word career because it's like that suggests one trajectory on like, you know, one job, one industry. And yes, again, I don't want to kind of like put anyone down that is on that because I think there are people that generally do love that and that is for them. But it's not for everyone. And I don't think things should be forced upon people. And I think I love that questioning of, should I be here? Should I be doing this? What if I tried this? What if I, you know, and yeah. where that's taken you. What if I didn't have sandwiches every day?
Yes. What would happen to the world?
And we're here. We're still surviving.
Yes.
Even though we're not having sandwiches.
Nothing's gone awry on the way. But I was once out for a meal. A friend had a birthday, and she was a friend who has other friends that we don't necessarily all cross paths. So we're at this big restaurant and we're sitting around a table, and I was sitting next to a lady who is an oncological consultant for facial cancers. Yeah. And I thought, that is fascinating. And she does her job, loves a job dedicated to that. And if somebody had offered that to me as a career path at school, I'd have gone, no, yeah. to be honest, that just yeah. sounds awful.
Yeah.
Very altruistic, just such a fantastic role to take on. And she embraced it. And I was fascinated to hear about her. But in the process of the introductions, it was like, oh, that's Carolyn. She's a stunt woman. So then people go, oh, and there were so many people wanting to talk to me. So Carolyn, blah, blah, blah. And but I really want to talk to this lady.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she is on that career path, but mm-hmm. she's happy with it. And that's yeah. where she's fit into society. And I think with mine, it was people don't, it's not that they don't respect it. I think they just can't accept it as that's what you would do.
Mm-hmm.
You should become a doctor or a lawyer or an accountant or the things that people can recognize mm. and think, yes, you will fit into society here well if you do this. And I was just, again, not deliberately defiant. I just thought, but I don't want to do that. And I don't think I should have to do that.
Yes.
This is what I'd like to do. So the people who are studying to be a doctor or a lawyer or an accountant, et cetera, they're going to go home and maybe binge watch something. Well, maybe not Netflix if you're not a fan, but they'll maybe go home, watch a film, watch TV, go to the cinema. Well, I'm making those films and television programs so that they can watch.
Yeah, we all fit
relax.
Somewhere, right?
Yeah, we're all in there because there wouldn't be any if there weren't people like, I mean, I just go in and do the dangerous stuff and leave. But, you know, like if there weren't actors, then we wouldn't have that entertainment.
Yeah.
Be it live theatre or TV or film.
Yeah.
Everybody fits somewhere.
What a great way to round that up. I've learned so much from you in this short space of time of staying curious, question things, you know, do you need sandwiches every day? I absolutely love that. And yeah, what's the worst that can happen? I want to thank you so much for coming on today and sharing, you know, your story and the insights that you have. You've been an absolute wonderful guest.
Well, thank you for having me. Yeah, you're welcome. Absolutely. I'm always up for
amazing.
Promoting different things, a different path.
Amazing.